A earthenware container that has three different rims. And the way we're going to understand the kli which is being discussed over here is that the main body of the earthenware utensil is just like any regular utensil, only right at the top of it, instead of ending like a regular utensil with one rim, around the main central rim, there are two other outer rims where right near the top of the container, there are two outer rims which extend slightly outwards from the top area of the utensil. This can be shown in the diagram for this Mishnah, and the reason why it's important to understand the case under discussion as such is because the laws of the Mishnah are based on the assumption that these outer rims don't actually contribute to the main use of the utensil, of the container. And its function really is much more for the appearance of the container, for it to look nice. But that area in between the outer rims and the inner rim is not itself used to contain things. Occasionally, as we're going to see, if the outer rims are taller, then they would be able to fill up the liquid even higher up, further than the inner rim. And in that case, it was used. But unless that was the case, then it's purely as a decoration rather than to contribute to the actual use of the container. And as a result, if the inner rim extends higher up than the other rims, all of the area outside of the inner rim cannot become tome because it doesn't contribute to the use of the kli itself. So it's considered to be something external and not a part of the rest of the kli. On the other hand, if the outer rim protrudes higher up than the other rims, then when necessary, they would fill up the container even higher than the inner rim, and the liquid would be held by the entire utensil, including the outer rim, in which case the outer rim does begin to contribute to the actual purpose of the main kli itself, and therefore our kol tome, all of the utensil, is able to become tome. If the middle rim out of the three protrudes higher up than the other ones, then the liquid would occasionally be filled up to that height, but it wouldn't ever be held by the area in between the outer rim and the middle rim, and therefore men of it aflim tome. Any area of the container from the middle rim inwards can become tome, whereas men of lachutz tahar, any area of the container which is from the middle rim outwards, that cannot become tome because that does not contribute to the purpose of the container at all to hold things. What happens if the height of all of the rims was equal? In such a case, the outer rims are not actually ever going to be used. Because again, the liquid is never going to be filled up further than the highest rim. And if the outer rims are not higher than the inner rim, then the liquid would never really be filled up in the container more than that which the inner rim is able to hold. In such a case, Rabbi Yehuda says an extremely original opinion and something which is quite unique to the laws of tumah, to the laws of impurity. We split the middle area, that's referring to the area in between the most inner rim and the middle rim. We split that area in half, such that the half of the area which is closest to the inner rim can become tome, and is considered to be secondary to the inner rim and the rest of the kli itself, whereas the half of that area which is closer to the middle rim is considered to be part of the outer rims, and that cannot become tome. This is quite an original opinion, because the area outside of the inner rim is not really used at all, but it seems like Rabbi Yehuda understands that because it's so close to the inner rim, so that area is considered to be really a part of the inner rim as opposed to being the beginning of the middle and outer rims. Whereas all of the area outside of the inner rim cannot become tome because it's not really used and does not contribute to the main purpose of the kli. And now the perek ends off with an important rule. Kli cheres me'emosem kavim tuma. From what point can earthenware utensils become tome? We know that something is only considered to be a kli that can become tome once its processing has been completed, and there's nothing significant lacking in the making of that utensil. The Mishnah says that that stage is considered to be when the clay has been hardened in a kiln, in a very hot furnace, where clay is hardened once it's been made into its shape, and then it becomes pottery, it becomes a real earthenware utensil. The Higmar Menachton, that is considered to be the final stage of processing and creating that kli, from which point it gains the status of a kli and can become Tomei. Perek Hemishna Aleph, out of the 9 Prokim, the 9 chapters between Perek Beis and Perek Yud, which discuss the laws of Klei Cheres, earthenware utensils, 5 out of those 9 Prokim, those 9 chapters, talk about earthenware ovens. And that is the subject of the next 5 Prokim of this Masechta, and very interestingly, the Torah says that an earthenware oven can become Tomei. The reason why this is interesting is because it's really an exception to 2 very important rules with regards to Tumah, the laws of becoming impure. And that is, firstly, as we have seen, an earthenware utensil can only become Tomei, and it's only considered to be a kli if it can hold things, if it has a base that can contain things within it. A oven, the oven which is going to be discussed in the Mishnayos, and which was used in those days, didn't have a bottom. The primary oven that was used in times of the Mishnah can be shown in the first diagram for this Mishnah. It was shaped like a cone, which means that it was wider at the bottom and more narrow at the top. And it was built and sort of attached to the ground. It didn't have a bottom. The bottom was the ground itself. And it was surrounded by a lot of clay in order to keep the heat within the oven. And the way that they would bake bread in this oven is they wouldn't put it on top of a tray inside the oven. Rather, they would stick the dough to the inside walls of the oven. When it was ready, they would take it off from the inside wall. They would peel it off from where it baked on the inside of the walls of the oven. From there, they would take it. And this means that the main heat which would bake the bread was not the heat which filled the airspace of the oven, but rather it was the heat of the walls of the oven themselves. Be as it may, the reason why this is a big exception to the main rules of Tumah is firstly because there's nothing that the oven can hold. It doesn't have a bottom that can hold things. And secondly, it's attached to the ground. Something which is attached to the ground has the same status as the ground itself in general, and therefore cannot become Tomei, just like the ground itself can't become Tomei. Nevertheless, it's learnt from the explicit mention of an oven becoming Tomei in the Torah, that this is indeed an exception to the general rules of Tumah. Begins the Perek Tanur, this oven that is being discussed, it was shaped like a cone, not extremely slanted, but it did have a slant, it was narrower at the top. The design was in order that the heat be preserved and reach the maximum levels, the higher temperatures, and the Mishnah says that the minimum size to be considered an oven that can effectively reach these temperatures, Techilos Arba'ah, which literally means its beginning is a height of 4 tefachim, meaning if the oven is originally made to be a relatively small oven, so the minimum size for that oven to be is 4 tefachim, Ushayorov, and the remaining part of a large oven that broke, Arba'ah, also needs to be at least 4 tefachim high. This is referring to an oven which was once much larger. It could have been 10 tefachim high, but then part of it broke. As long as that which remains is at least 4 tefachim high, it can still be used as an effective oven, and therefore it would still be able to become Tomei. Rav Meir, that's the opinion of Rav Meir. Chachom say, when are these words said? When is this true? Begodol, with regards to a large, regular oven, Aval Bekoton, but when it comes to a mini oven, and we're talking about an oven which they would allow children to play with and to bake mini pieces of bread using that mini oven. In this case, we don't need it to reach huge temperatures. They would probably prefer that it wouldn't reach very high temperatures, even if it wouldn't be an extremely effective oven that can be used for baking bread on a large scale or to the best quality that one would like. If it was enough for the children to be entertained than to make their small pieces of bread, and therefore the Chilosei Kolshu, its beginning is any amount, meaning the minimum size that it needs to be when it's originally made is any amount. The truth is, the Gemara says it has to be at least the height of a tefach, so that it can be heated up to a certain extent, or Shiyarav Rubai, and the remaining part of a larger oven that is designated for children to use is the majority of it. If the majority of the original oven remains, then people would generally still use it, and as such, it can still become Tomei. Continues Mishnah, although there are two main big exceptions that we see with regards to earthenware ovens becoming Tomei, the other general laws that apply to impurity, to Tumah, apply here as well, and therefore Mishnah Tekomer Melachtoi only once the processing and the creating of this oven has been completed can it become Tomei. What is considered to be the final stage of the processing and creating of this kli, of the oven? Mishayasikenu, once it is heated up, they let sufgonin enough to bake inside that oven, sufgonin, which is a kind of dough, which is relatively thin and liquidy, and it requires less heat in order for it to bake and turn into bread. And the main reason why we need to heat up the oven in order for it to be considered complete is because the clay that was placed around the oven in order to insulate the oven and preserve the heat within the walls of the oven, the clay would only attach itself fully and be affixed to the oven once the oven itself was heated up and the walls would heat up, and the clay itself would also harden and be fully fixed to the oven. And that only happened once the oven was heated up. Now, because this is the reason why the completion of the creating of the oven requires the oven to be heated up, so that the clay will attach itself and be properly affixed to the oven, we therefore don't need to heat the oven up to the regular temperature that is required for baking bread. Because the reason why we're heating it up now is not for the sake of baking the bread, it's in order to allow the clay to attach itself properly and for the oven's processing to be completed. And therefore, even if it's only heated up to a lower temperature, which is not enough for regular dough to be baked in, nevertheless, that would be considered the completion of the creating and processing of the oven. Rabbi Yehuda says it's an even lower temperature. He needs to heat up the oven, the new oven, enough that if it were an old oven, that heat would be able to cook sufgonin, which is this dough, which is rather liquidy and can be cooked in a lower temperature. Older ovens heat up quicker, and Rabbi Huda is saying that one needs to heat it up enough that if it were an old oven, it would be able to bake the bread, which is a lower temperature. But again, the reason for these amounts of heating it up is nothing to do really with the baking of the bread. It's all an amount which is necessary for the clay which is around the oven to be affixed properly to the outside of the oven. The question is how much heat is required for that to happen. So Rabbi Yehuda and the first opinion of Tanna Kamma are arguing as to how much heat exactly is necessary. These are really just signs for the amount of heat which is necessary for the clay to attach itself to a large enough extent to the outside of the oven. Mishnah Beis. In the previous Mishnah, we talked about a tanur, which was the classic oven, which was cone-shaped. It was wider at the bottom, narrower at the top. And that was used for baking, for making bread. This Mishnah will talk about two other stoves rather than ovens used for cooking. Pots and pans are placed on top of the stove, and the heat of the stove would be much, much lower than the heat of the tanur, to the extent that often the stoves were even placed on top of a table. There would obviously be a thick layer of pottery or stone to protect the table, but this just shows that the heat of the stoves was lower than the heat of the tanur, and in addition, the stove was usually much smaller than the classic tanur. And whereas with regards to a tanur, the dough is placed on the inside of the oven, on the walls, and that's how the bread is baked, when cooking with a stove, they would place the pots or the pans on top of the stove, and that's also why the stove was typically smaller, because there was no need to place the food inside the stove itself. Says Mishnah, Kira, a double stove, which has place on top of it to place two different pots or pans. Techilos HaSholosh, its beginning is three, meaning the minimum size that it has to be when created and formed is a height of three tefachim. Ushiyarech HaSholosh, and the minimum size that a remaining part of a stove needs to be, if it was once larger and it broke, is Sholosh, has to have at least a height of three tefachim, for it still to be used by people and to retain its status as a kli. Just like every earthenware utensil, it can only become tome once its processing has been completed. And ezel gemar melachto, what is considered to be the final stage of its processing to become a kli, once it's been heated up enough that the easiest egg, which refers to a chicken's egg, which cooks the fastest, the amount of heat that is needed to cook such an egg, when trufa, when the egg has already been beaten, which also causes it to be cooked faster, and in a sunaba ilpas, if it's placed inside a frying pan that's already been preheated, so we're talking about the thing which is the quickest to cook, it just needs a little bit of heat inside that oven for the egg to cook inside this preheated frying pan. That is the amount that the kira, this double stove, needs to be heated in order for it to be considered completed and for it to be able to become tome as a kli. The heat would strengthen and reinforce the walls and the structure of the kira. That's why this is considered to be the last stage of the processing of the kira itself. Continues the Mishnah, hakupach, a stove which has room at the top only for one pot to be placed there. This stove was used, the vast majority of it, the use of this stove was for cooking and frying, placing pots and pans on top of it. However, it could also and was sometimes used for baking. That is to say, there was room inside the kupach itself for things to be placed inside the oven, which essentially means that it was baked by the heat of the oven itself inside the oven. That's the main difference between baking and cooking. Where cooking, the food would be on top of the oven, inside a pot or a pan. And the Mishnah says that asoila fiyah, if he made the oven and designated it for use as baking, which means that the food would be placed inside the oven itself, then shiura katanur, its minimum size, as well as the minimum amount that it needs to be heated up for, would be katanur, the same as for a tanur, which is designated for baking. Asoila bishul, if he made the oven or designated it for cooking, which means that things would be placed on top of it, then it required a lower heat for cooking, and therefore shiura kakira, its amount would be the same as for a kira, and also its height would need to be smaller. Its minimum height was a smaller height. Since the food was placed on top of it, it wouldn't need to be so tall. The Mishnah continues, with regards to the vast majority of kelim and people and things that can become tome, we generally don't find that the item itself can be split into two. Rather, if a part of the kli becomes tome, then all of it will become tome. That having been said, we have seen a number of cases already where certain extensions of the kli are considered to be separate entities in and of themselves. In this next part of the Mishnah, we're going to see an additional novel idea where a part of the extension is considered to be part of the kli and has the same status as the kli, whereas the rest of the extension is not. Ha'evan ha'yotzeh min ha'tanur tefach, a stone which protrudes from the side of a tanur, that's the cone-shaped oven which gets very, very hot, says the Mishnah, tefach, a tefach of the stone, a tefach is the size of a fist, that amount of the stone which is nearest to the oven, that can become tome, but the rest of the stone which is used as a handle of the oven, the rest of it, which protrudes outwards, cannot become tome because it's not really necessary. The handle doesn't really need to be more than tefach, and therefore any part of the handle which is beyond a tefach away from the oven cannot become tome. Umina kira shalosh etzba'os, and the stone handle which is attached to a double stove, so 3 finger breadths, that's the width of a finger, times by 3, that amount of the stone which is nearest to the kira is considered to be the part which is necessary and used as a handle, but the rest of it would not be a actual part of the kli. So the Mishnah says, chibur, only the amount which is closest would be a connection to the actual kli. Hayotz min ha-kupach, a stone handle which protrudes from a kupach, which is a single stove, which has room at the top only for one pot. So again, it depends. Asoy la-fiyah, if he made it and he uses that for baking, then shiura katanur, its measurement follows the measurements of a tanur, which is also used for baking. Asoy la-bishol, if he made and uses the stove for cooking inside shiura kakira, then its measurement would follow the measurements of a double stove, which is used for cooking. Amar Rabbi Yehuda says, le-omru tefach elo ben ha-tanur v'la-koisel. They only said this unique idea that we take a tefach of the handle and we say that it's considered to be part of the kli, whereas the rest of it is not. We only say this novel idea if the stone, which is essentially the handle of the oven, is situated between the oven itself and the wall of the person's house or the courtyard where the oven was placed. Because in that case, a person is very likely to cut the stone and cut off any part of the handle which is not necessary in order to make the oven, to move the oven as close to the wall as possible, so that it wouldn't take up so much room. And that's the only reason why we would consider the rest of the handle as not being part of the container, not being part of the oven, because anyway, it's designated to be cut off. But otherwise, if it's not going to be cut off, then we don't say that the rest of the handle stops being a part of the kli. Since at the end of the day, this handle is larger, and it's all part of the same handle, so all of it is considered to be a part of the kli, and will become tomei as soon as any part of the utensil itself becomes tomei. The Mishnah ends off, Hoyu shnei tanurim smuchim zeh lozeh, if there were two ovens adjacent to each other, and there was one kind of handle which was attached to both of them. This can be shown in one of the illustrations which have been sent out for this Mishnah. In this case, noisin lozeh tefach lozeh tefach, we would, so to speak, give each oven one tefach of the handle to be considered a part of that kli, vashar tohar, whereas the rest of the handle, the area in the middle which is not within a tefach of either oven, would not be able to become tomei. So even if one of the ovens becomes tomei, if food touches this middle area of the handle, it would not become tomei. And this, of course, follows the opinion of the Tanakama, the first opinion of the Mishnah, and not Rabbi Yehuda. Now, it's important to note that we're talking over here about a stone handle. Now, stone is one of the materials that cannot become tomei. Even if you have a stone container that can hold things, it cannot become tomei. So how on earth can this stone handle be, even if it is considered to be a part of the kli, how can it become tomei? The answer is, it has the status of a yad. A yad means it's a handle, it's some kind of extension, which contributes to the use of the kli itself. And in such a case, even if it's made of stone, it can become tomei, since it's an extension of the kli itself. Mishnah Gimel, Atteres Akira, a border which somebody forms around the top of a stove, around the area at the top where the pots are placed, tahira, will remain pure even if the oven becomes tomei, meaning it's not considered to be a part of the oven, it doesn't contribute to the purpose of the oven, and since it itself is not a kli, so it would not be able to become tomei. Tiras HaTanur, which literally means a courtyard of the oven. The tanner is the cone-shaped, very hot oven. And we're talking over here about a area next to the oven which is closed off by pieces of wood or earthenware or whatever the material may be. And it's an area next to the oven which is designated for placing the bread in that area once it is taken out of the oven. And we're talking here about a case where it's not actually attached to the oven, but it's right next to the oven, a closed off area over there. Bizman shigvur bro tfachim, if it is at least 4 tfachim high, which is the minimum height for an oven to become tomei, mitam b'magvur aver, it can become tomei via touch and via its airspace. If we're talking about a area which is fenced off and sort of enclosed by earthenware, because it does help for the oven. The oven is used to bake bread. This is used for placing that baked bread inside it. And therefore it gains that same status as the oven. P'chusmakan, however, if it's shorter than that, then tahira, it cannot become tomei. That having been said, m'chibroloi, if you actually attached it to the oven, afilo al-sholish avonim, even if it was just placed on top of three stones and attached to the oven, but very weakly, that's why it would be placed on three stones in order to raise its height a bit, so it will be easier to attach it to the oven with a weak connection. Since at the end of the day it is attached to the oven, and it's helping the oven, it's allowing the bread to be placed there, tomeia, it can become tomei. And in addition, if the oven becomes tomei, then that would also become tomei together with the oven. The Mishnah now talks about parts which are attached to the side of an oven or a stove, into which small items can be placed if they wanted to warm up those small items with the heat which comes from the outer wall of the stove. Beis hapach, a small container for placing a jug of oil into it if they wanted to heat up the oil. Beis hatavlin, or an area in which they can place spices which they wanted to heat up slightly. Or beis haner, a place into which a lamp and a candle, a wick, could be placed. If they wanted to light a candle next to the kira, next to the stove, so the Mishnah says, Shabakira, all of these things which are attached to the outside of the stove, mitamim b'magar, can become tomim midrabbonon if a source of impurity touches them. Although this part of the oven is definitely not serving the same purpose as the oven itself, so it shouldn't really be able to become tomei. Midrabbonon, it can become tomei because these were things which were commonly added to the sides of ovens. However, since it's only tomei midrabbonon, ve'enon mitamim ba'aver, if a source of impurity enters the airspace of these small earthenware protrusions which came out of the stove, then it would not become tomei. In order to differentiate between this impurity, which is only midrabbonon, and Tumah midoraisa. Divrei Rav Meir, that's the opinion of Rav Meir, Rabbi Yishmael Mataher. And the truth is it should read Rabbi Shimon Mataher. Rabbi Shimon says that it cannot become Tomei. He understands that the Rabbonon do not add any stringency over here, and since these don't serve the same purpose as the oven itself, they cannot become Tomei at all.